Good evening, friends. Welcome back to the Front Porch. My name is Dennis Rogers, and I'm joined by Michael Daniels. How's it going, Mike? How is your alternate Monday?
Pretty great, Mr. Dennis. What do we got going on this last week? We had the end of Picard. That series is over now, man. We had the end of this, not the series end, but the season end of Mandalorian too. But like the actual end of The Next Generation. Well, I guess kind of. We don't really know, but it seems like it's the end, right?
Yeah. I think they're done. If anything, this might be a little bit of a spoiler, but they might do a spinoff. But I think the core, like Patrick Stewart Picard story is done.
Yeah. I agree with that. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But that was, you know, this week was watching that one. I wouldn't even say bittersweet. I was like, it was nice to have that this week, to have that thing. And but the bittersweet part of it, I think, without going into the whole thing, which we'll go into in a minute, is that that's the only trick we've got that's post Next Generation. Right.
Well,
I mean, Discovery goes a billion years in the future, but it was initially based in the past, right?
And Lower Decks
is Lower Decks. No.
He goes on the Titan.
He does.
With Riker.
He does. And Riker, yes.
So okay. Riker's post. A captain, so correct. It's post, yeah.
Yeah, what do you think they're going to do with that? And we're already right into Trek, right off the bat. What do you think they're going to do with that with, because the characters from Lower Deck are supposed to be on Strange New World. How's that going to work out?
Who knows? I assume it'll be some dumb Q gimmick.
That makes sense. You
know, cross timeline into the Q-verse or something.
Q hasn't been on Strange New Worlds yet, and they got to get him in there somewhere, right? They always have to put that dude in there.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been easier to have cameos in that series than in, like they've been doing in Picard, because you voice act people and they don't have to look like Data is somehow a 70-year-old android.
Yeah, that's true. I guess we could just go ahead and launch into that a little bit. I guess I'd hit the launch pad right off the bat, but I will say
out of space dock.
Yeah, I will say just generalistic
impulse. Even though,
go ahead.
Regulations say thrusters only, but we're going to go quarter impulse.
Quarter impulse. And I know there's wide opinions on this season and series in general. I will say in general, I do not care for the series. And would even recommend people not even watch the first two seasons at all, out of three.
Sure.
And not saying that three is great, but the fact that they lean so heavily on Next Generation, or just, I would even call it Next Generation, the next movie, is what this is. It's just, and actually, I think it would have been better if it was just a 2.5-hour movie. And just
see that.
Had the old people do their old people things, and leave off a lot of the bad writing and bad dialogue, which doesn't get much, hasn't gotten any better out of the three seasons. I think it's still pretty bad dialogue.
Yeah.
But I, you know,
we talked about this a little bit off the air, yeah. And I think this is something I can say without us going into spoilers. I don't know if you do want to go into spoilers and talk about the season at length, but last week you asked me about Ted Lasso, and one of the things I said in so many words is that I have faith in the writers.
Yeah.
We've gotten two amazing seasons with just excellent like characters and relationships and stuff about mental health and all of that, that even if something happens in that series that I don't like, I trust them.
Yeah.
Right. I'm like, whatever they're going to do, it's going to be good. And I mean, you know, that's how trust works. They have not burned me yet, right? Like, so far, two seasons, some, you know, 18 hours of content or whatever, has always been excellent.
Right.
And so when something happens in the latest season that I, you know, I'm uncertain about, I'm like, I don't know if this is good as a season. And I'm like, I don't care. Like, I don't have that same kind of skepticism. Star Trek Picard has been the opposite,
yeah.
right? Like, we've had two seasons of, you know, just, you know, I don't know. We were talking about this because I was up at Trotsky's for game night last night, and I said, I don't know if they have writers. I don't know. Like, I wonder if they have writers who've ever even seen Star Trek, yeah. Right? Which is, you know, you get into that, like, what is Star Trek? What is Star Wars kind of BS argument. But I don't, like, there is enough familiarity with the franchise that I can recognize because of all the references, right? Because of the deep cut, like, other characters they pull in and stuff like that. That I'm like, there clearly are Trekkies, if we're going to use that term of art, in the writer's room.
Yeah.
But I've never had good faith in Alex Kurtzman, right? Ever since, I don't know, 5+ years ago, I read an interview with him where it really seemed like his highest aspiration was running a franchise. Like, Favreau and Fellini run a lot of Star Wars, or how Feige runs MCU.
Right.
And that he was more of a Star Wars guy. And I'm like, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. That's not the guy I want helming Star Trek. And of course, he's one guy, right? And, you know, we now have on and off 4 or 5 different Star Treks going on. So, you know, it's not fair to judge the whole series based on that. But,
I think there's more Trekkies in the Picard writer room than there are Discovery writing room. Although, that means the difference between 1 and 0, right?
Yeah, if you want to compare getting punched with getting stabbed.
one
is better than the other. That's a ridiculous metaphor. But, you know, we had a whole first season with some good moments, but overall, like, way too much time on characters I didn't like and just bad writing. And season 2 was even worse, with a lot of just heavy handed. And some of this is me, right? Like, I talked to our buddy Chris, who's also a big Star Trek fan, and he didn't see the political overtones that I saw. And I'm like, okay, maybe it's not as heavy handed as I think, if not everybody's seeing it, but I could see it, and it, you know, I couldn't unring the bell, right? I'm like, oh, they're trying to say something about xenophobic America in this, you know, the Federation hates Romulans story.
Well, even without those, like, meta things, like, just the writing,
just individual, just
the writing, like, the dialogue between characters was not great, right?
Yeah, stilted, awkward, you know, all of that. So when we got into season 3, even when, like, there were things I enjoyed, but then anything that wasn't, like, a 100% win for me, like any scenes or dialogue or whatever, like, got penalized for the negative, for the bad faith that I have in the writing room, the writer's staff, from the first 2 seasons, right? It's again, it's like the opposite of Ted Lasso. I'm like, you guys have been burning me for 2 seasons of this. And so I'm already, like, I'm already ready. Like, I'm anticipating it being bad. And so when it's even a little bit not great, I'm like, yep, there it is.
Yeah, I knew it. See that. Maybe my thought with this one was, or my feelings were, what is it? It's like you're being tortured, and then occasionally they let you off, and it feels better.
Stockholm syndrome.
Maybe that's what it is.
A little bit.
That I have that, like,
they would bring in a character,
and I'd be like, oh, okay, that's that, and that's, I can enjoy that, or a different character, you know, and, like, I'm enjoying this part of this thing, and it makes me a balm type thing, and then sure enough, there's another scene.
I get what you're saying.
Yeah, and then
it's like an oasis in the desert.
Yes,
right?
So compared,
you
to
see
those,
how many heavy-handed metaphors I can cram into this one podcast episode.
Yeah, it's. So, and there was still times where there were, you know, whole scenes when it, you know, it's like you can ignore it and say, oh, they're going back to this bad writing and bad dialogue here, but it'll be over in 5 minutes. And then it's a whole episode and you're like, oh, okay, that was maybe we're losing it again. And I think Picard had a couple of those where they were like, man, now we're losing it, you know. And then they would come back and maybe get it back again. So it was almost like I would describe season 3 as a sputter. Like, it was, you know, you have a motorbike that's going down the street, and it's like, bah, 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 bah. You're like, this thing's going to turn over and take off at any time, right? And it just sputters there. Mm-hmm. And at the end, it finished the block at the, it made it down the end of the street, and you're like, that was a ride. Technically, the engine was going.
Right,
but sputtered all the way through.
Yeah.
And so I look back at it in that exact same way. It's that, you know, this was better than the other time where the engine in the first two seasons, in the same metaphor, the engines never worked and I was pushing the thing all the way down the thing to make myself like it. I guess we can go into spoilers now, because I do kind of want to mention exact details of why I think we would feel some of these things.
Okay. I'm going to hit the bell. We are going to talk about Star Trek Picard seasons 1-3, though mostly 3. So if you've not seen it yet and don't want to get spoiled on the particular specifics of the season or last couple episodes, go ahead and skip ahead. We sort of gave final thoughts at the beginning.
Yeah.
So you can skip ahead and we'll be talking about something else.
I have a feeling that the producers recognized, here's where I can see the behind the scenes in my mind's eye. The producers have recognized the problem with that. There's a problem with the series. They recognize that the CBS, Paramount, or whoever it is that runs the show was like, okay, you've gotten enough good faith.
I don't know
from
which
us.
Is the parent company, but yes CBS, Paramount
are like, you've given us enough faith, and these actors are good. You've got enough following to justify a third season. But I'm pretty sure they knew that this was going to be the last one right off the bat. And they were told that, right? And the producers are like, okay, we need to do something to make our investment worthwhile. And we all know that what we've been doing for two seasons isn't working. You can say like, oh, the first season maybe was a misstep and we're going to correct it in the second one. But none of those mistakes were corrected. They were only compounded in the second season.
The first season felt like it ended as a complete story.
Yeah.
Right? Sure. To where... I don't know. It's been a while since the first season. But I feel like when season 2 was announced, I was like, oh, okay. I thought they were done, but whatever. Season 2 ends on a cliffhanger that they just ignore. They just completely drop.
They totally ignore it with, like, season 3.
I'm like, I am fine with that because so much of season 2 was bad and dumb. But I also don't like that they did that. I'm like, you don't get to just reboot. You don't get to just...
They totally rebooted. This is a total reboot.
Like, that's a lazy, cheap... Like, again, I was not interested in the story that cliffhanger was hanging. With the Borg and stuff. But it feels really lazy and cheap to just drop it.
I think that's the best phrase.
Yeah, we're starting all over with... Frontier Day.
Yeah, I think that's the best phrase or word that you could have said, I think, is reboot. I think I would say, I'm from now on going to say that season 3 was a reboot of Picard. Because while Patrick Stewart was playing that multiverse character of Picard, because I'm almost just viewing this whole series as a multiverse type thing, because he in no way acted like Jean-Luc Picard. In the entire season or series, I did not one time see him. I know he's like 80s and stuff, but
yeah, I go back and forth with stuff like that. And I think that was true for most of the characters, because we're in spoilers here. We can say they brought back the entire Next Generation cast apart from Will Wheaton.
Sad to me. They should
the change in those characters from their 90s counterparts. Varied from character to character and sometimes from episode to episode. That's my biggest gripe. Yeah. And I liked it more and less with different characters.
Agreed.
Right. Agreed. And we talked about that a little bit in person last night. Like the Picard stuff, I can sort of see, right? Like 20, 30 years, like, sort of in solitude, like what kind of person is he going to be? I didn't mind the changes to Beverly, which I can see to some people being goofy and dumb. I didn't like any of the Zen vegan Worf stuff.
Yeah.
That felt like it was played for laughs.
Yeah.
And all that. So yeah, that's a different, That's a whole different conversation.
I agree. I don't know. I think that's worth stating. My list is, I think Patrick Stewart didn't play Picard. It's not the Picard at all. And my reason for that is that Picard was always a commanding leader. This guy was a desperate, he always felt pleading and begging every season. I thought LeVar Burton did a great job. He felt like Geordi grown up and had a successful career and now was at retirement age and was just like, I know a lot of people at work that are, between the ages of 59 and 67 or something. And they're like looking forward to retirement. And Geordi felt that way. He's got family now that's grown and they're taking over. He felt good. I liked him. Data, I'm really glad that they only gave us like 3 episodes with Data. Like, I didn't want any more Data. I am so done with Data.
I mean, a major part of the season 1 storyline was about Data.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Done with it. And then him being in, like, that actor being in every episode for the season, the series.
Playing
just,
that other character in other season 2. That was one of the worst things about season 2.
Right. So, did not like that. But the evolution of Data, where they put him there, was fine. Because it was only short-lived, and I was okay with it. Like, when he became this new Data, this kind of human Data, was... Some people might say eye-rolly with, like, okay, they're giving us reasons why he should be old, which is just, okay, it's just hand-waving the fact that these actors are, you know, 70, 80 years old.
Right.
Fine.
Of the budget him look like the old with CGI.
Right. Yeah. Okay, so data, fine. Limited, fine. I liked the doctor. I liked, what's her name? Gates McFadden.
Gates McFadden.
Yeah, I liked her character. Why am I thinking her?
Same.
What's her name?
Gates McFadden.
No, the Dr. Crusher, Beverly.
Dr. Crusher.
I couldn't get her character's name. I like it. She seemed, you know, they made the whole thing that she is separated from them for 20 years, and that was kind of a point. And her and Jack have gone this whole different kind of life, and that makes sense. But she still kind of felt like she was still her own person there, because I think Beverly Crusher was kind of her own individual character within the crew anyway, and had her own life, because she left, right? She left for a year, and was that. So this felt normal to me.
Fan favorite Pulaski.
Yeah, Pulaski, right. I also, not a big fan of the Worf thing. I like Michael Dorn playing Worf. It's cool, but, you know, yeah, I didn't like what they did with the character. Who else was there? The last one. Is that everybody? Oh, Riker was fine as a retired Starfleet guy, and as a, like, always wanting to kind of live the glory days with his old mentor, that felt okay. I didn't like the interaction between him and Deanna much. Like, that felt all bad writing the whole time.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Yeah, and it would have been fine had she not really been in it much. And she wasn't, but they brought her in, and then it just became this, like, him basically trying to make out and do her on every time that he's around her. You know, I'm like, that's not like they were when they were on the Enterprise, and it's not like a couple that's been married for 25 years, you know?
No, it was like how Riker was with every Alien of the Week.
Yes, correct. Yeah, it was.
But not with Deanna.
It was just really weird, so... that means Deanna, I didn't really care too much for either. She just felt out of place, and they put her in there because they needed to have her in there. That's the characters. I enjoyed the last season. I've kind of just now complained about the first two. I enjoyed the last season from the Next Generation parts of it. I particularly liked the last episode or two. Was pretty fun. I think just fun. It was also Star Wars-y fun, I would say.
Yes.
And
I don't know if you were there for this part of the conversation, but I said this. I can imagine a world, a version of myself that watched the Enterprise fly through a Borg cube like Return of the Jedi, the Millennium Falcon in Return of the Jedi. In watching it, me watching it, this actual real world that we're in, 100% eye rolling. And I don't know if there are a lot of things, like some nitpicky things, but like, this is Star Trek, right? It's like, it's not hard sci-fi, but they try really hard to make all of the science plausible, right?
Yeah.
And so it's a show that kind of invites a level of nitpicking. The scale isn't right, right? Like a cube, yeah. Even that cube is not that big, that there's space, that there's tunnels inside they could fit the biggest, like even when they go to the museum, the ship museum, yeah. Like the Enterprise D doesn't fit in the ring, yeah. Right? It's bigger than all of these other ships, right? You see a picture of it beside Kirk's Enterprise, the no letters Constellation class. And so like there's that. There's a weird thing that I don't know if it's canon or from reading the paperbacks, the what in Star Wars they call extended universe mm-hmm. stuff, where I think Data, fully functional Data, should have no problem technically like piloting the like he is at least as has at least as much processing power as the ship's computer.
Yes.
Right? And so the like drama of like, oh, he believes he can do it because of his emotions, yeah, and he feels yeah. it in his gut. Like, that was all dumb to me.
Oh, it wasn't just dumb. That was what you just said before. That was the terrible, terrible writing. That whole scene was terrible writing. And to bring it back yeah. to your Ted Lasso comment about the writers, is that it feels that Ted Lasso characters never would have taken those easy lines. There was so many, like, LeVar Burton got up as Geordi, and he's like, the computer can't go through that fast. Not even my daughter can go. And as he's saying these, everybody's like, oh, Data's going to do it, right? And then as soon as Data goes, mm-hmm. let me do it, you're like, oh, he's going to say his gut, right? Like, it's just all so incredibly obvious and terrible writing that the words they're saying, you know what they're saying, and they're trying to act it, but nobody says these words in real life, mm-hmm. right? And, or would ever say this in these situations. Yeah.
And which movie is it? First Contact? One of the Next Generation movies did Data with emotions.
Yeah, sure. And, right? And it was one of the worst ones, probably. Yeah.
Was it First Contact? Maybe it was Insurrection. Right? Yeah, Insurrection was right. real bad. And so change. like we've done this before, yes. right? We've done Data with feelings yeah. before,
right?
And so that felt tired to me. And I don't know
him. When he said, let me do it, it's my gut. And they're all like, okay. I'm like, yeah, this is just pointing out the example of how you can have the fun things and the right people and the Enterprise D and all the cool things you want that are Star Trek. And then you just get, I'm going to say it, and I'm using our one freebie, shit writing. And by terrible people that aren't writing a thing, they're just writing because it's their senior thesis thing. They have to write a script. And
right. It takes me back to call back to my conversation I said before, spoilers about whether Trekkie's in the room. I don't know that that's even a thing. Like, yes, somebody who doesn't have an affection for a property should not be writing in that property. Right. Right. Just say like adapting or whatever. Like, you don't want somebody who was more of a Dune guy making your Lord of the Rings movies.
Yeah.
Right. Or vice versa.
Right.
So, like, that part of it is true, but the inverse is not true. Like, somebody loving and being a huge fan of a thing does not make them qualified
yeah,
right. to write in that space. Like, yes. I think...
I agree.
You know, I feel that way about J.J. Abrams in both properties, especially Star Trek. I don't know, Star Wars is a little different, but, like, I love 2009 Star Trek, but there's a lot of... there's a lot of issues with it, and Into Darkness is just a mess. It's just a hot mess. It's like fan fiction of the Khan story, but you have Benedict Cumberbatch in there, so maybe that makes it fine. And only somebody who knows the Wrath of Khan film and story can make Star Trek Into Darkness, but them knowing and loving Wrath of Khan doesn't mean they're going to make a good Star Trek Into Darkness, right? You get
yeah.
what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. No. It that goes with the directors and producers and scriptwriters in general. And you and I could probably just list off a ton of things off the cuff. I say things like, Rian Johnson wanting to make his own movie that's not, you know, Star Wars with The Last Jedi, and right. also with Taika Waititi wanting to make Thor Love and Thunder his own kind of jokey thing and not like be a Thor movie. You know, and when you give these guys that aren't necessarily source material people, you know, things, then they're going to make their own thing and it's not going to be source material. But you have to have both, right? You definitely have to. You can't have a guy that's like fan servicey the whole time and that's all it is. So yeah, I feel that season three was producers stepping in and cleaning house. Like they cleaned all the old cast but one character out, right? They're all gone.
Right.
And you know, they're done.
Well, except Picard.
I'm sure it's different directors. And you know, they got a whole new cast type stuff. And they're like, okay, let's redo the Borg. Cause the Borg's interesting and fun. Like, well, you did that last season, which is, you know, crazy, but it did feel like the producers knew this was their last season, wanted to do a thing that they wanted to do. They feel like, I have a feeling that producers were fans that want of Next Generation and wanted to do this, but they already fired everybody on the team. They had to keep somebody and they kept the writers. Which is probably the worst thing to keep. I'm nitpicking on this show, but there are many things that I did like. I liked a lot seeing all those characters come back. I liked Shaw, actually. I was really surprised that I did like him. Didn't like the corny death they gave him. You know,
sure.
You're the captain now, 7 of 9. I'm like, oh, good. They got the 22-year-old writing the script that day.
Right.
And anyone under 25 is going to hate this podcast. But, yeah, it was just... That kind of stuff was real bad, but I like said really like Shaw. I liked the Titan, although it also was very dark.
Who I can't break you. You made me think of this that thing.
Yeah.
Who do you think came up with the Borg assimilation by genetics through the transporters? Which is like, I'm torn there between like that's really dumb, but did Next Generation do as dumb of things? No. I mean, yes.
Right.
Do you think to in your imaginary world where there are writers, you know, like a four quadrant way, are there writers under 25 and writers over 25? Which group do you think came up with the only the under 25s are affected by the magic Borg?
I think that's that was probably a team thing. And the reason I say that, I see that as a team thing, is because
it's a group effort.
Yeah, it was a group effort. And here's why. I think someone, probably the older people in the writing room, had to say, like, we've got to have a reason why only the old people are still functioning, are the heroes.
Right.
Right. We've got to have a reason. And then that feels like a younger person to say, well, let's make it a transporter thing. You know.
Sure.
Which... So the reason was dumb, but the reason why they even had to make it a thing felt like somebody was trying to have a reason why we have the old people in here.
Right.
Which was just, you know, again, that's the lazy writing parts of it was, you know, when they, that whole deal. Also, they did a bait and switch with the changelings. Like the changelings were the main characters, bad guys. And then they kind of wasted them. And
so many... Maybe not so many, but several like lazy red herrings, or even calling them red herrings is giving the writers a lot of credit.
Right.
But like dramatic story elements, story mechanics that were just dropped.
Just dropped. Right? Like, right.
Like there was a portal gun, a giant portal gun. Remember that in like episode 2?
Oh, right. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Like I think Vadic's ship did it a couple times. Maybe that was supposed to be a thing, and then it was just no. It was just a big distraction so they could steal Picard's DNA because Iremonic
syndrome.
They
don't actually use, right?
That like, was his whole like. That was his death. Like that was central to not central, but that was a significant part of Picard's character development. Like the Iremonic syndrome was actually just a leftover Borg bioweapon from when he was Locutus.
That like, got really convoluted, like way okay, over convoluted, right?
Yeah.
And they had the super hand wave science fiction-y that like, oh, it was indetectable and never with all of our science advanced, you know, scientific medicine can we detect this thing that was passed genetically down to his son even. And you're like, That's a whole bunch of nonsense. And even for a sci-fi guy like me, that was a whole bunch of hand-waving nonsense. But yeah, I had forgotten until we just mentioned it, that the dropping of story, like the dropping of the changelings. And then they come back in like one sentence or two where they're like, oh yeah, and they found out a way to detect changelings. Problem solved. I'm like, really? There was a whole episode about how terrifying it is that no one in Starfleet's going to believe them. And they're never going to be able to talk people into, you know, realizing the changelings are taking over, and they still wouldn't have, because it was the Borg that was, you know, causing the fleet hijacking. Why would the changelings decide to, like, I don't know, it just got, it made no sense. Again, bad writing. The characters, the actors who love these characters, all of them do, love being in Star Trek, and you can tell it. Did everything they can, and was pretty good. The CGI did wonderful jobs. The sets were really cool, if not dark, like they've been on Star Trek in the last 10 years. But how did you... Okay, so I'll ask you a couple questions. How do you feel about the rechristening? We're going to run out of letters in the alphabet for Enterprise. Rechristening of Titan into Enterprise G. How do you feel about that?
We talk about this in our group chat. Did something happen... which letter was the ship with the female captain who was somebody from before? Well, I don't recognize.
Admiral. Yeah, it was the girlfriend that was going to take over Riker's spot as the number one, Shelby. Do you remember that? He got in the two-part episode where he got taken over by the Borg and became Locutus. Riker became the number one, and that two-part episode started with an admiral coming and talking to Picard, saying Riker has turned down commission three times now, and and he's been offered another one, and he won't take it again. And they brought Shelby in because she is a scientist of the Borg, the most studied the Borg a lot, and he's like, she'll make a great number replacement for him when he takes over his own command. So then Picard gets captured, becomes Locutus, Riker steps up, becomes the captain, and Shelby becomes the number one. So that's who she is.
That's who she is. I knew she was somebody I should probably recognize, but her ship was the Enterprise F?
It's got to be E or F, right? What was E?
Anything? Well, they had E in the movies.
Okay, so it had to have been F, because this is G.
And so, like... what happened to the F? Did it get destroyed?
I don't know. I'm sure there's something online, but they never showed it explicitly.
Honestly, all the part of the finale when they went back to Seven and Rafi, like doing their nonsense with a 150-year-old cloaking device to break the magic fleet format, all of that was so dumb to me that I was kind of tuned out through it.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if the previous, because they wouldn't have two ships with the same name. That was weird to me. That felt like a Rey Skywalker thing. Like, we'll call the Titan the Enterprise. Like, why don't they have a new Enterprise? Like, why are they renaming the Titan? That just so they can have an Enterprise with Seven and Jack and Sydney and whomever else that I'm forgetting the name. In the spinoff show.
So I did a quick little Google search here. And it says that the Enterprise was secretly destroyed, which if you and you missed it, that you can see an enhanced screenshot in the big battles where the wreckage of that ship is in the shot down in the corner or something.
It gets destroyed. I also stand by the thing I said in our group chat where they couldn't make a spinoff show with the Enterprise F because of the memes.
Oh yeah,
Which is dumb, sure. But. Probably true.
So moving to there, what you just mentioned, I'm actually okay with. I'm down with an entirely new writing crew for. Let's do a Strange New Worlds double duty writers room for the Seven of Nine series with Enterprise. I'm actually okay with that. How do you feel?
Yeah, same deal. It could be good with good writers.
Yeah, I honestly think writing matters a whole lot. I think that Seven of Nine, the actress. Is pretty good, but she forces it a lot. I think she seems angry. Like, she's constantly angry.
Sure.
And when she's doing the inspirational speeches that she does a couple times, it feels like she's like yelling at them to tell them what to do instead of, you know, inspiring them or something, which is fine. You know, that's another one of those things that can come with time if you get into a role. And she was one of the best actors in the series. So, and I like the rest of them. I like Jack. Love the scene where Jack walks in and acts like it's his ship. that was great. I like him in general. And the actor, again, can be better with better writing. I like the LaForges. They're cool. And the rest of the young cast was okay. Yeah, I could definitely do with that one. And that would... I wonder if they would call that Star Trek Picard and continue on with that nomenclature, or just call it another
thing. I wouldn't think so.
Star Trek the next generation.
Yeah, the next generation. I made that joke when somebody early on was like, "Oh, are they going to do a new thing with all the youngs?
Yeah.
With all the youths?
All the youths." Well, as long as they're not all the youths that they did in Discovery, right? They were all under, you know.
True. Except for Saru.
What they should do, here's my thing. They should time port Ming-Na Wen's character into this Enterprise, and she can be in it, and then it will be great. And then we'll be fine.
Do you mean Michelle Yeoh?
Did I say Michelle Yeoh? I thought Ming-Na Wen... she's Fennec Shand. She's Fennec Shand. I'm doing Star Trek and Star Wars again. Fennec Shand is Ming-Na Wen. Michelle Yeoh was Philippa Georgiou, right?
Academy Award winner, yeah. Michelle Yeoh.
Correct. Yes. It's kind of amazing that incredible actress was in Star Trek Discovery for like 2-3 seasons. Such a great... I mean, she was great. I've seen her in like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, other shows before that where she's just been amazing.
I heard someone on a podcast recently reference that anecdote that she was in Crouching Tiger, and they're like, part of what's impressive about her performance in Everything Everywhere All at Once is for her to be a very accomplished martial artist and like fight badly in those action sequences.
Right, sure.
She doesn't know what she's doing.
That's fair.
Like, I think, yeah, that's a good point.
I think I saw an interview with her on that, talking about that very subject at the times where she was like saying that she's got to act because this character doesn't know things that she actually knows, like in real life. I think I remember seeing something about that. And she just, you know, in the interview, she's kind of like full of joy because it was an acting challenge, which is great.
Sure.
Which is really cool. But anyway, yeah, if her price tag would up the cost of everything.
Right. Yeah.
Deservedly. So she gets her money now.
Yeah.
So we got Strange New Worlds coming up not too long this summer. So that's exciting. Sure. There was the trailer out for that thing, which, you know, just looks as great as we've always seen.
I actually don't think I've seen that.
Oh,
it's one
God,
of those things
wrong?
Where I'm like,
oh my gosh,
like there's zero chance I'm not going to watch it. Yes. So what's a trailer going to give me? Like,
oh, that's
possibly
that's
spoilers or something like
that. That's fair. I think there's a risk. It did for me what I think a trailer is supposed to do, and kind of reignite what you liked and reminded you a little bit about, oh yeah, I like this character. Oh yeah, there's that character. And they're going to do more with them. Right. So that's, I think there's a couple dialogue lines between La'an and Una, and you're like, oh yeah, those characters had a good relationship, you know, like friends and stuff, and they're gonna have more witty banter, and I'm excited about that. So I think the trailer did some of that, but you're right, you don't have to watch it because there's no reason unless you want to get a little excited about it. And I will say,
when is it, like, yeah, is that like June, or am I thinking of something else?
I want to say it's June. Yeah, I think it's June.
It's not too far away.
I will say that the trailer, this is semi-spoilers, shows us that there is some heavy Kirk in it. So they're going to have, there's at minimum an episode clearly centered around Kirk, according to the trailer. Yeah. And from the trailer things, the dialogue seems to be very 1960s Kirk, where like he, not womanizers is not the right word. He's like a ladies' man, right? But right. not intentionally, just because he kind of is.
Sure.
So, and that the trailer kind of lets you know that. I'm like, ah, oh, they're. I think the writers for that show are super fans, but not like they may be not our age. They may be like post Next Generation's super fans, you know, that watched all the right. stuff in the back. Man, now I gotta. I'm gonna go look up all the writers' room for all these things, and they're all. I'll be wrong on all of them. I just discovered yeah, be made of people.
See
who
if
are 50
all
years
these,
old.
All these vague aspersions I've been throwing at the writers for these various shows is
yeah.
even remotely accurate.
It'd be great because I'm telling you, they're all gonna be like all for Picard and Discovery. They're all over 50 years old. You know, fans of the original series from birth. We'll be totally
or
wrong.
it's somehow one team writing Discovery, Picard, and Strange New Worlds, and I'm like, what? Okay, now what can I blame it on?
Right, and the head is actually the head writer for also Ted Lasso.
Right, there you go.
Yeah, well, I have to do some research on this stuff. Mm-hmm. Anyway, yeah, so I've got a little bit of track, but that's done. Picard's done. Discovery will be done. I'm not even watching that, so I don't know.
I don't know,
but I know they're in their last season, whatever is either currently going on or future going on. They got one season left. That leaves Strange New Worlds and Lower Decks, which is not really standard Trek stuff, and that's it. Yes.
Aside from the cartoon Prodigy.
Oh, Prodigy. Yes, I guess it's one I've never really seen.
No, same. I think I tried to start it. It got like 5 minutes or maybe never even started.
But I guess there's only one real world Trek then, right? They've paired.
If Discovery is done. Yeah. I don't know if Discovery is done.
I'm certain that it's done. I just don't know if it's going on right now. Like, I don't know.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, like I know that the season that's next, whatever, is their final season.
Gotcha.
The one that's being put out. They're done. Let's put it this way. They're done filming anymore. The characters that they played their characters for the last time type thing.
Right.
Unless they get shunted over or do a Picard or whatever. But yeah, it's only one. And, you know, we were having this long heyday of Trek brought back, and now it's kind of slowing down. There's a lot with CBS and Paramount and them wanting to shore up their properties too and save money, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, we'll see. You know, it did definitely felt like they're doing a 7 of 9 series. So that was very overt, I thought. Okay, moving on to Mandalorian, which ended its season. Also to mixed reviews. I guess I didn't look at reviews, but mixed. No. Thoughts people I think have had. I'll start this and say, being the more Star Wars fan of the two of us, I feel that this season was you and I have talked about this a little bit, and I think our conversations have made me understand this series a little bit more, being episodic with some through lines. Understand a little bit more of Dave Filoni and how he writes series made me understand and appreciate this season of Mandalorian better. I keep wanting to do this is a serial show, like where it's one storyline all season long type thing. And they don't do that, but they kind of do that, which makes it a little confusing.
The kind of walking both. The first season was not that. It was very episodic.
Yeah.
And the second season, even a little bit less so. Like, there was a kind of through arc between season two, but it was still mostly episodic.
Yeah, it was mostly episodic, right.
This, like we talked about a couple weeks ago, was like, they had a season arc, but, and I don't even, like, now that we're at the end of it, I think they had enough content to have made more episodes along the way about the big story they were building toward.
Yeah.
But for some reason didn't. And then in retrospect made all of the little side missions seem more egregious for the time that wasn't spent building up to the climax.
Right.
Right. Like the whole climax felt rushed in the last three episodes. And then even in the last, in the, you know, the first two of those three episodes, so the penultimate and anti-penultimate or whatever, the third from the last, because they spent so much time on a side plot, I'm like, you were building up towards something and then you just packed it all into this, almost entirely into this final episode.
Yeah.
Like, or at least the last two. Again.
Yeah. I think if you go back and watch the first two seasons, they do similarly the same thing. The only difference in this season is that they have more of that through line throughout the season. Like the fact that Bo-Katan is in so many of the episodes. So, and she's basically the through line of this season. I'm looking at this season, now that it's over, as a world building season. Like it's just, and I've got kind of like thoughts on this. My thought is that they knew going into the season that they've been greenlit to make a movie. Well, obviously that was just announced like within the last month.
Okay.
But it's been made official that, Filoni gets to make a movie that brings all of his series together to one big climax.
Okay.
So I'm pretty sure that he was aware of that at the start of the season, like when he was writing this season. And this feels like a lot of just building up of the Mandalorians and their lore and their people and their government and then the secrets with what the Empire's doing. And it's just, there's a whole bunch of things that are pieces everywhere. And maybe when we look back at this in the next 3 years or so, 3-4 years, that we'll say, oh yeah, season three was just building up the story, you know?
Sure.
And we had a last episode or two that gave us a climax that we kind of wanted. But overall, the season itself feels like it's doing a lot of things without a lot of direction.
Yeah, a little bit like Marvel and Phase 4.
Yeah, right. It feels meandering, but I do feel that it is going to go somewhere, but I don't really know. I also feel the Mandalorian is more of, while it's a Dave Filoni thing, I think it's also more of a Jon Favreau.
Favreau?
Yeah, and I know that Filoni is focusing heavily on Ahsoka, which is a Rebels show. So, you know, there's a lot of things that go on behind the scenes with stuff. You think, you know, one guy only has enough time for enough things. So, yeah. I guess my overall on Mando Season 3 was that it was fine. It was fun in moments, dumb in other moments. I'm thinking of the Jack Black episode. And just okay. I really enjoyed seeing more Mandalorians. I love that thing. I love visiting Mandalore. I love Bo-Katan's character. More of her. That was great. I'm in the minority and don't like any of the Grogu stuff at all. And I didn't like the bringing back of the villain again. Moff, whatever. Gideon. Yeah.
Giancarlo Esposito.
Yeah. He's fine, but move on, you know.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed IG-11, but they should have just brought him back. It just took forever last episode. And they give Grogu a vehicle thing. Fine. Whatever.
Sure.
So, yeah. And our show, friend of the show, Bill, constantly kept pointing out how the Mandalorians are constantly getting attacked by giant creatures. They just like attract them no matter what.
Right.
It's like, dude, don't they know they got to start like putting some laser turrets up for whatever. They're big creatures that attack them everywhere. I think that's not true. So anyway, would you, I know you're not really a big Star Wars guy, but how did you overall feel about the season?
No, I mean this, between this series and Andor have been and we talk about Rogue One in the movies, but yeah. In the series, series, really, I mean, Star Wars has had a better track record with streamer series than some of the others like Marvel or Star Trek. Well, I mean, Star Trek is primarily a series, not movie franchise, but, although they've had as many movies as many as Star Wars? Maybe not. It's close.
Oh, they've had more. I think they've had more. Pretty sure.
Well, if you count the Abrams verse, yeah, it's like 12 or... Yeah.
Abrams and the original series. Original 14, series had 15. Like 4 or 5, right? And
6.
Yeah, and Next Generation had...
Next Generation had at least 4 or 5. Well, and Generations is a little bit both.
Yeah. Definitely Star Trek had more, I think. Then.
Yes, but, you know, again, primarily a series, television series.
Sure.
Because they're... Well, I guess Obi-Wan Kenobi and Boba Fett were both pretty weak, and Mandalorian has been pretty strong, and... Andor, of course, was good. Andor was good for the same reason that Rogue One was good, where definitely. You can definitely. Have, like, even knowing the end, you can still tell an interesting story. I don't know how Obi-Wan managed to F that up, but they did.
That one felt like directors to me. It looked
probably.
It looked
probably.
Like on sets and stuff.
Oh, sure. Yeah, oddly, like... hamstrung by the future of where the characters went instead of, I don't know, it's weird. Like, we know Andor lives until Rogue One, and that was fine, but we knew, like, it's just decisions that they made, like, to have Obi-Wan dueling with Anakin and stuff, and you're like, well, we know neither of these characters die, so there's no stakes in this.
Yeah, and there still wasn't stakes on Andor, like, he's never gonna get killed.
He's
but
never
they
gonna
still
kill.
Did it well, right?
They could still give tension, and I don't know really what the difference is there. It probably just comes down to writing,
acting, directing, yeah, all that.
And so I've been pretty pro Mandalorian, like, since it starts, since I saw that first episode, and I'm like, here we go. Here's a guy. It's this cowboy thing.
Mm-hmm.
We're taking a break from the laser swords and the lights and the Skywalkers, and we're going to do a different kind of thing. We're in a desert. And not that it is not, like, it has those moments where it leans into the, I don't want to say juvenile because that sounds derogatory, but the like, fun for 12-year-olds kind of Star Wars, which is fine. Like, that's part of why I despise the constant comparison between Star Wars and Star Trek. I'm like, they're such different things. You know, that stuff does annoy me from time to time, but for the most part, I'm like, yeah, this is fun. And this season was very up and down. Like, there were moments that I liked, but there were so many where I was like, oh, sure, yeah, Grogu's going to do a flip, and he's going to fly the ship by himself. Like,
totally.
I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care about any of this.
I'm with you.
Yeah. Some of that is me, right? I'm not going to...
No, I was there with you too on this.
Sit here and declare it objective truth. But it's mostly pacing, and like, so much of the content felt like padding, and it wasn't because, I mean, we said this, I don't know if we said this on the air, this is a spoiler, well, I can say this without spoiling it. The finale of season 2 was a big climactic moment in this series, and then it's comparable to the Infinity Saga, Infinity War Endgame in the MCU. And so then to sort of undo that stuff, some of which happened in the middle of the Boba Fett series, which is just mm-hmm. poor planning, mm-hmm. top to bottom. Not that I didn't enjoy.
Or smart because it rescued viewership for 2 episodes.
for Boba Fett. Like, yeah, I completely loved seeing Din in the Boba Fett series, but that didn't make the Boba Fett series.
No, yeah.
It just, you know, put a finer point on how bad that show was. All of that stuff kind of raised the stakes for this. It's very similar. I hate to keep comparing it to the MCU, but it's very similar. Like, you peaked the storytelling and then tried to, like, go back to the status quo of, like, wacky adventure of the week, and it just doesn't, it's not as satisfying because we just had this big thing. And then getting to the end of season 3 and seeing that they were building to another big story climax, but without, you know, dropping any breadcrumbs to build up to it, just made it even more dissatisfying for me.
Yeah.
Unsatisfying.
I agree. I liked a lot, but I also disliked a lot. And it's the exact same reasons you just said. I really can't say them better except to point out even more of those. Getting rescuing the kid from the bird creature, you know, kind of lame, mm-hmm. you know, training Grogu on the beach with the Mandalorian kid. Like, he flips and he gets to, why didn't the kid just shoot three times? Grogu's just standing there, you know, it just was so groan worthy at times. And then you have other cool episodes like the doctor one where, you know, he gets kind of tricked and type thing. That was okay. And then you go to the Lizzo and Jack Black episode where you just have some weird cameos for the sake of cameos that don't matter. And they're fighting battle droids. And it didn't make any sense whatsoever.
Doc Brown is there.
Doc Brown. Yeah, it was just weird. I had some of those complaints in the first season, too. Like, this episode is not great because it's written, directed by a whole different people. You know, this episode, next one's great. This one's terrible. This one's, you know, because of the way they've written it. So maybe it's just not different. Maybe it's just this season just didn't hit as on all the cylinders. It probably would have had I been a big fan of Grogu. Maybe it would have hit better. The one thing that bothers me a little bit, and we see this in our friend group, is people saying, oh, they ruined it by showing Luke in season two. Like, that, to me, has zero bearing on anything. Like, cool, they had Luke there for literally 5 minutes. That's it.
That's the thing I was describing with trying to not spoil it. I think it's less about showing Luke, because that also was kind of, I was not impressed by that. I was like, that is a clear deepfake. And
yeah,
it's also, maybe it depended on when it came out, like, I'm especially skeptical/resistant to, like, super original trilogy fan fiction.
Yeah.
Not fan fiction. Fan service.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, I wanted to see, like, Ahsoka or somebody interesting. Like, not CGI Luke, because I know they're not going to, or deepfake Luke. Like, I know they're not going to do a whole story with deepfake Luke because it looks fake. Like, yes, the technology is amazing. It's still not convincing. What I mean, and what I think, and I can only speak for myself in this. It's less about showing Luke and more about, like, that was this big story climax. Like, oh, Grogu's whole deal was he's going to become a Jedi. Oh, yeah. And it's a whole thing we're building toward. And now he's back. And so Mando's doing his thing, but he's stupid. Still got... Yeah, and it sets an expectation for the storytelling that they are now not delivering on.
Yeah, I saw a little meme or something on the internet the other day where it was with... I might even post this, you might have saw it. Is that Padme and Anakin talking, and Padme's like... And Anakin's like, The Jedi are terrible, and they're just the jerks, and they won't let us be together, and I want to marry you and love you. And she's like, well, quit. Other people do.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know? And I'm like, yeah. Like, they let Grogu quit. They let Ahsoka quit. People could just leave. Right. You know, there's... even in the prequels, there was the Jedi that made the clones, I think. I can't remember his name. He quit. You're like, so it's a mm-hmm. thing. It just makes Anakin, like, stupid. You know, for not doing those things, or selfish, you know. But the Luke thing, I said it didn't bother me because I felt that whole scene really was about, you know, wrapping up the Grogu storyline and how Din, you know, took off his helmet and you know, finally give him over to a good trainer that we all felt good at, and that emotional part with him and Grogu, that was great. That's probably why I have a disdain for Grogu now, is that the fact that they brought him back just feels pandering to merchandising and fans who just like baby Yoda, you know?
Right.
Like, oh, I watch people who watch the show just for baby Yoda also bug me a little bit, you know?
Sure.
It's like, he doesn't do anything. If anything, he's the problem that Din has to deal with the whole time. Like, without the kid, Din would be so badass. But he's got to constantly be dealing with his kid the whole time.
Sure.
So you know, I was glad for him to get gone. And now, and what's worse is they're trying to make him an awesome Mandalorian. Like, no, he's still a baby. He's literally can't speak, you know?
Right.
And it bugs me when they say things like, oh, they asked in, he's too young to take the oath. He can't even talk, you know, or he's too young to wear armor. Then he can't be trained. And Din's like, no, go ahead. He's totally fine. I'm like, dude, it's like a 1.5 year old. You're asking to, you know, to do these things. Are you an idiot? So that's, again, just some bad writing because they want Grogu to be important.
Sure.
And speed along. I just don't know how they're going to say that and justify that he can have such a big development in 1 year time when he's 50 years old and hasn't made any character growth with himself. So anyway, that's me. I'm clearly complaining. I stopped complaining about that, but. the upsides of this is, which I should always say, I love the Mandalorians. All of them were really cool. I love the last stand they had with one of the characters. Was pretty cool. I love Bo-Katan and Katie Sackhoff playing her. Just really, every time she's on screen, I'm like, that's a cool character.
Sure.
Yeah. So everything with the Mandalorians, I kind of like. I think they're a better Klingon than Klingons. Because Klingons are like this warrior-centered race and fighting and honor code type thing, but I have never believed that the Klingons could actually make a ship and get to space. I can't imagine a Klingon shipyard where they're having engineers discuss the finer points of how to put schematics together. But I could see that with Mandalorians. Like, I can see them doing that.
And I don't know about the Mandalorian. My vision of them is like they are where the Jedi are powerful and superior for their like faith and mysticism. The Mandalorians are like the technology version of that.
Yeah.
Right. Like they have their creeds and their, but it's not. I guess there's a little bit of mysticism to it, but they're mostly superior because they're technology, right? They're Wakanda.
Yeah.
To borrow a newer thing. I don't want to get into the Klingons thing because we're running long here on these two topics, especially on Star Trek, which always happens.
Right. Oh, no, we don't go back to Star Trek. Yeah. So anyway, Mandalorian season 3 is over. It's obviously it's unlike Picard. It has a lot of legs still to go. It's going to be out for quite some time, and we'll have other series is happening, Ahsoka being the next one. I want to say one more complaint that it's laughing complaint, because I've heard it again today by our buddy Dane and some other people. It's like, is Greef Karga really leading 15 people into the desert that are he talks to them like the people of Navarro, and it's a city the size, it's got like a 20,000 city thing. He only rescued like 15. I don't understand any of that. It's like that's the kind of thing that the director of the show just kind of dropped the ball on every time, and that's was the problem with season 3 a lot, is that they just didn't see what they were doing. I don't think they had bad directors in there. Okay, so moving on from that one, we should probably talk about our movie of the week before we start going off on other things.
Run out of time. Yeah. All right. This week we watched Flash, Savior of the Universe.
You mean Flash Gordon. You mean like the fastest man alive?
Nope. Quarterback for the New York Jets.
Oh, Flash Gordon. Okay.
Flash Gordon, 1980.
Yeah.
I'm gonna call this a camp classic.
Camp is a good word. Good word. Yes.
It's schlocky. It's goofy. It's, I'm sure, was a classic for a lot of people. It's based on a comic book series that I think was going into the 2000s, incredibly.
Really? Okay, all right.
Yeah.
I wouldn't call this a comedy, though, right? Yeah, I wouldn't say comedy, because I don't think they were trying to be comedic at any point.
No, nothing about this is intentional comedy.
Okay.
The comic strip or comic pint, whatever, I think it was like newspaper comics at first.
Oh, probably, yeah, like a pulp
is
thing, yeah.
From like the early 30s, and it shows in some of these characters and stereotypes.
Oh, for sure.
Right at the front here.
They had a TV series, I guess, mm-hmm. of this too. I've never seen, but
no.
So people, when this came out, knew of it, I guess. Like, not just by reading the comic book. They like, oh, it was probably like a Buck Rogers thing or something, you know?
Yeah, it's like between this, I think, I watched a YouTube video on this, and I don't know how accurate any of this is, but Buck Rogers, I think, precedes Flash Gordon, the original comic versions.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Buck Rogers precedes this by, I think, less than a decade. So it's like 20s versus 30s kind of thing. But this then, went on to inspire, like, almost all Western comics between this and Buck Rogers. But we are talking specifically about the 1980 film with Max von Sydow, Brian Blessed, Boss Nass, as I call him,
mm-hmm.
Timothy Dalton, Topol, Sam Jones as the title character, who I don't think I've seen in anything else except for the movie Ted.
Ed playing himself from this. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I saw this, a little bit of history on this one. I saw this, I was doing some memory searching here. I had to have been like 7 or 8. So way back then, movies were in theaters a lot longer. They played in theaters for a long time. And then they played in second run theaters and third run theaters for years after that. So you could go watch, like in this example, Flash Gordon, which came out in 1980. In 1983, you could probably still watch it in a dollar theater, which is what I watched it in, which is just cheap theater. You know, you go and watch it in matinee, and it literally is a dollar to watch back then. And they just showed movies that were several years old.
Right.
And I think that's how I watched this. I know I watched it at a place called 12 Points Theaters back in Terre Haute. And it was a rundown theater, but I was a kid with my cousin who was a little bit older than me. And so, you know, obviously the parents thought it was okay for us to go by ourselves to watch. So I remember it from that standpoint. So I did see it definitely in the theater, but in 1980, it was 5. So there's no way I watched it when I was 5. So I'd have been 6 or 7. So seeing it 7 or 8 is kind of like the peak age for this, 8 to 12, I'd say.
Sure.
For it being like really cool and fun. But I even remember the feeling back then of it kind of being dumb, like shaky. So I wonder, even then, you got to compare it to things like Star Wars and such that were out before that even. Right. And this looks like has a look that's worse. So it's like, I think that a lot of that was kind of maybe intentional. Like it was intentionally campy.
Oh, sure.
In retrospect, you know. I will say my overall review quick on this one is that I was so not going to want to watch this after the first 20 minutes. I was like, I just don't know how much of this I can handle. You know, how bad
the
it is.
The early stuff when they're, very opening scene, here was me, and I think I said this in our chat. They're showing Ming and his crony, whatever, and they're like, there's a planet on the spiral, you know, whatever they always say, like the backwater planet off in the thing.
Yeah.
They call it Earth.
Yeah.
Right. And then the first button he pushes says earthquake. I'm like, what? What? Come again? Like, really? That's what you're going with?
And the doctor, like when they're on the plane and he's like hitting on the tour. Like, none of it. It was just so incredibly horrible. He's this football player for the Jets, the quarterback. And he's hitting on she's the, like, I'd say not
she's
tour
like a
guide.
Reporter or something?
No, she's a, what's the person who plans trips?
She's a travel agent.
Travel agent. She's a travel agent on this little plane. And then this, like, I guess meteor hits the pilots and they disappear. And he lands on this terrible mad scientist guy, which I still don't understand the mad scientist guy. And
he
I'm
was
like,
the only one who knew that it
right,
was aliens
course,
and not
course,
just
right?
random
so
stuff.
After 20 minutes, I'm like, this
He's
is
Jeff
this
Goldblum
is...
in almost the worst everything.
Of it. And I'm like, I don't know if I can handle, I can't watch much more of this. But then I think after about an hour in, I started to really like it. And not because it was good or because it's campy, just because it was like, yeah, man, get him, Flash. You know, I think it started to sink in when, after he started playing football with the enemy troops. You know what I'm talking about? Like,
he's fighting. Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, this has gone way over the line. And
this is what I'm watching now.
Yeah. Now I think I get it. Everything washed away from me in my mind. And then every other scene was like, oh yeah, you've got a Robin Hood type guy with Timothy Dalton. And there's this hyper-sexualized woman doing nothing that they could do after that football scene surprised me. You know, like from then on, I was like, this is cool. And then when Brian Blessed comes out as the Hawkman, I'm like, yeah, okay. Yeah, that's what this is. Yeah, cool. So at the end, I was like, I was banging my heads to the, you know, he saved every one of us song by Queen and stuff. And I was like, yeah, get him.
Yeah, I mean, that was me at the beginning. I'm exaggerating, but that's my biggest complaint about this. Is I wish they had gotten Freddie Mercury to write a couple more songs.
Yeah,
because that was the best part. I was like, wow, this song is amazing. I mean, it's Queen, so of course it is. But then there's nothing for the whole until the end. And I'm like, oh, I mean, there's music, but it's like soundtrack score.
Yeah,
you know, no lyrics.
There are two scenes, by the way, that have been nightmare fuel for me for all my life. And now I remember them now as I watch them. That's why I remembered the scenes watching it in the theater, that I watched this in theater, because I remember seeing it in the dark theater. It terrified me then, and I had nightmares still. One was putting the hand in the thing.
Sure. Like, that's the old, I don't know where that's, they do it in Roman Holiday.
Oh, well, all I know is I saw it Flash Gordon for the first time, and that just, to this day, I never want to put my hand in somewhere. Like, you see it in, Dune, when he puts his hand in the box,
Dune,
you know?
Yep.
And that right there, watching that in Dune, brings back up these, like, PTSD feelings from this movie. And then the other one was when he gets caught in the swamp and the big spider legs come out, and he's like this bloated belly thing, and the spider legs are...
Yeah.
That freaked me out so much, and I still have arachnophobia because of that.
This is I'm stealing this from a meme from a couple years ago, but movies in the 80s and 90s really made us believe quicksand was a bigger deal.
Yeah, no, totally, 100%. Yeah, it's like nothing now, right? Like, I mean, in real life,
it never even comes up in a movie. Like, you know, not only is it not something you'd ever encounter in real life, it also doesn't appear in movies anymore.
Yeah. Because we're not that dumb anymore. Yeah. Like, oh,
right.
Okay. So yeah, I liked this, but it took a bit. It took a minute. I think it had to shake me up.
Sure.
So like, cause the sets are so bad. Right. And
right. It made me think of that, you know, the thing people say about Star Wars. It's like, sure, you could watch it. You know, somebody watching it for the first time now is not really going to get it. Not that they won't get the story. Like, the story is very straightforward, but not get, like, why it's a big deal. And you have to, and again, this is a couple years later, so it's not even that much of a fair comparison, but you have to, you don't have to, but to get it, you kind of have to understand that this is the kind of stuff that was being made at that time. And sure. So to compare this with Star Wars, you're like, oh, I see why Star Wars was such a big deal.
Well, I think that this was even, because it came after.
Worse,
such,
because it's intentional.
Yeah, I think it was. That's the thing. I think it was intentionally.
Not worse.
Comic book.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, anything that was cartoon or comic books was definitely meant to be
hokey,
you know.
Like Adam West's Batman.
Yes. Yes. There you go. Like Adam West's Batman. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, so when someone pitches a comic book movie, they expect this. They want this. The studios want this kind of movie to be made. And that's what they gave them. You know, this is, I don't know I don't have the history with Flash Gordon of knowing, reading him when I was a kid or any kind of that stuff, or knowing what came before or living even in that time, because 1980 I was right. five.
Right.
But still, even I could still tell that it was very campy and intentionally. Another thing that kind of won me over a bit was that, like, while Flash was goofy, he was a little sincere. I was impressed at how dedicated he was to the girl that he just met.
Sure, sure. Right? Yeah, it was oddly, like, it definitely was not free of 80s era misogyny.
Oh, and, for sure.
You know,
yeah.
There's nobody in this movie passes a Bechdel test.
Oh,
but,
God, no, yeah.
The two female characters have a decent amount of agency and competence.
Yeah.
For
oh, they do actually. You're right. Yeah.
For the era in which yes. this was made.
Yeah, I mean the princess, you know, is trying to get away from her dad and comes around and you know manipulates and can kind of controls Flash and her fiance guy and the Dale is the love interest, and she escapes on her own basically, mm-hmm. with a little bit of the doctor's help. And honestly, Flash he's no superhero, which is so weird. Like his big claim to fame is that he recommends that they work together. That's it. Right.
Teamwork.
What is teamwork?
Yeah.
and that's it. That's his one thing that he does better than anyone else. And he saves that guy as he's falling off the side of that terrible circular gladiator thing that they're doing. And he's like, I'm with you forever now. But, oh, man, it had some also great one-liners, I think. I'll watch it again so that I can start remembering some. I particularly liked the wedding vows that Ming was having with Dale.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that? Or he's like... she's the woman of the hour, just, you know, of the
right,
hour,
right,
you know,
right.
do you promise to love her as long as you want or do whatever you want with her? And like,
it was
just so great. And then of course the thing about the pills, you know, did you guys give these the right pills?
Mm-hmm.
So dumb. But yeah, over the top characters. I like the Destro dude. It was Clytus or something like that was his name. So dumb. Anyway.
Oh, the guy with the helmet the whole time. Like his face melts out of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then he just dies kind of, you know, off a thing. It's so I would watch this one again. I think, okay, coming out of spoilers, whatever. I don't even know if we went into spoilers.
We didn't go into spoilers, no.
I would recommend this for, drinking night with the buddies.
I think.
Yeah. Right. Like,
yeah, that's about as much we did watch it. Also watching it for our movie club, which we'll meet tomorrow. So we'll see what they
think about it.
But it's definitely a, like, I mean, the early parts, I don't know if I said this earlier, the parts on Earth before they leave feel like a Mystery Science Theater movie.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Yeah. Who I feel that we missed out by not having this on our 2020 movie
it
nights.
Probably was on the list. We just had way more movies than we were going to get to before people started doing things in person again.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And we stopped doing movie nights.
This would have been a good one, I think, because
yeah.
I could find myself. I watched this one obviously stone sober. No problem. But man, if I was a little fuzzy in the head, I could see myself just giggling at so much of the things.
Sure.
In a happy, joyous, fun way. And listen to some of the one-liners. I particularly love things that, like, Dale, the girl, walks out. Mm-hmm. He's getting ready to fight. And she's like, I love you. I love you, Flash. But the Earth only has 14 minutes left to live. And you're like... Oh, you just had to give us a time update. That's the only thing you're saying here. He's in the middle of fighting for his life, and this is what you're telling us.
Right.
So many just really goofy script lines were really fun.
Yeah.
So yeah. Okay. So my turn next week. Is that right?
Yep.
did I pick? Oh, okay. I thought about picking Krull, which is another 80s sci-fi type thing. But I don't think anything can really, at this point, compare to Flash Gordon and the camp that was that.
Yeah, so we need a cool down before more.
Yeah, for sure. Because I think Krull tries to be a little bit more serious. And I don't want to see a Flash Gordon serious. I would probably go through that, but I don't remember. But anyway, I'm skipping on Krull. And we're going to go a little bit totally opposite. We're going to something serious. Rain Man with Dustin Hoffman and Tom Cruise from forever ago. Was it
90s? It's got to be 90s.
I think it was 90s. I've only seen this once, and I saw it around the time-ish that it came out, maybe a little later.
Yeah, that's the same for me. So
yeah, and I remember enjoying it, but I remember nothing about it besides the synopsis of it, I guess.
Right.
But I'd love to watch it again. I think I saw maybe a TikTok of it one time, and I was like, man, I need to watch that again. So I'm going to make you watch it with me, Dennis.
Nice, nice. That's what this segment is for.
that's right. Oh, well, okay.
Let's see if anything I have here is...
Hey, wait, I'll ask you a question. I saw you play last night. We had game night, and you were there, and you played Small World of Warcraft, like the small board game. So that's Small World, the board game, with Warcraft, not just skin, but like characters and things.
A Small World is a game where you... It's a board game where you combine a race, a faction... I shouldn't say faction, because faction is an actual mechanic in the World of Warcraft version. A race and an, not adjective, but a descriptor. And those are two separate cardboard things in the box, and you combine them together. So you might be mountaineering elves, or fishermen dwarves, or enraged kobolds, whatever. This is like that too, except it's all World of Warcraft themed. So you have night elves, humans. Justin played the Forsaken, the undead, the playable race undead, and then you also have, because it's WoW, you have factions, right? So there are Horde and Alliance, and also neutral, or kobolds, and actually I don't know if they're kobolds, but that's a mechanic in the game. It was fine. I think if you read up on this game on Board Game Geek, you'll find the Forsaken are generally acknowledged to be overpowered. I won't go into all the details of the mechanics, but we played three of us, and it's one of those things that scales, like the overpowered aspects of the Forsaken are worse the fewer players you have. And so Justin trounced us fairly handily.
Yeah.
The other unique mechanic to this game is that you play as one of these race attribute combinations, and there's almost no way to get more troops, more people, because it's dudes on a map game, sort of.
Yeah.
And so eventually there's a mechanic where your race goes into decline, and then you pick another one, and you sort of start over with getting some minute benefits from the declined race. And Justin never had to do that. The Forsaken mechanic is such that he could just keep putting new dudes out on the map, which is kind of broken. And Small World also is a game that I don't know if we've talked about on the podcast, but I've never really enjoyed. I've played it a handful of times over the years, and every time, time will go by and I'm like, maybe I didn't give that game a fair shot. We should try it again. And then we play it and I'm like, yeah, I just don't like this. Something about playing as a race and then having them decline and playing a different race, something about that doesn't jive with me. There are a lot of mechanics, a lot of things to keep straight, a lot of admin where you're counting and all this kind of stuff, where it would be significantly better like on an app, which is, you know, to me a little bit of a sign of poor board game design. So it's fine. I would maybe play this one again with some house rules to fix the Forsaken thing, but only because of my affinity for Warcraft and like knowing the races and go, oh, this is an interesting, you know, I'm playing enraged night elves. Like they don't get enraged, but he's also playing the Forsaken, and Sylvanas did burn down Teldrassil, so I could see how that would make the night elves pretty enraged, like, you know, which is more just me bringing something to the game that it's not really built in. But
I agree with it. Like, I didn't play this one. I kind of want to play it because I do like Warcraft the way, like you were saying. But Small World is the same way with me. I actually own it on, I know on, iOS, but I didn't play it often. I played it a couple times, but I didn't play it like religiously, like I did some like Ticket to Ride. Primarily because I always have a hard time telling if I'm doing well in that game, because you're like, you're doing really well, and then you go into decline and you're in a rebuilding phase, and then like the game seems to end abruptly unless you really kind of have already every turn mapped out along the way, what you're doing. And so I always end, and sometimes I'll win. I'd be like, okay, I thought I was doing okay, but I don't really know, you know. And that's always been a problem with me. And then you play it again, and because everything's different with all the mix up, which is a benefit to the game, I just don't know with this race combination if I'm doing it right or not.
Yeah,
so
it's kind of hard to like learn strategies because you're because it's different every time.
It's different every time. So yeah, that's general Small World issues. But the skin seemed, you know, a cool thing to do with those kind of. I did like the skin on the Wrath of the Lich King Pandemic game. That was actually.
Yeah, I didn't play that, but we talked about it.
Yeah, that one's a fantastic one. So, you know, at least they got two of them. Because, you know, sometimes you can have, like, World of Warcraft Monopoly, and that's just dumb, right?
It's still just Monopoly, yeah.
It's still just really dumb. But this sounds like they at least had some, like, the races did things that were like the races, I guess.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's good. We played across there more
Journeys
of Middle Earth. Nothing more to say on that front because it continues to be an interesting game with every adventure being different, and it's a computer D&D ran thing. So basically what it was.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And I enjoy playing co-op with the people that I'm playing with. They're super fun.
Nice.
I love that our group is vastly different personalities, and you know, it's just makes every turn different because everybody's doing different kind of goals, I guess. Not real goals, we're all doing the same goal, but they're, you know, they one guy wants to combat a lot, one guy wants to get items, one guy wants to run away, you know, which makes it really makes it really fun. I'm having fun with the fellows on that one. We'll wrap this up in the last 2 minutes. You're still in the area, right? And we're talking about, are you going to be going to the drive-in this weekend?
That's my plan.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're going to go see two D&D movies we've already seen again, and talked about. Yeah.
And I haven't seen Mario. So
you've not seen Mario.
We'll talk about that.
And that's in the day. Is that first, right? Mario first?
I don't know.
I hope so, because you don't want, like, the second movie you usually fall asleep in or like, you know, trying to stay awake.
Sure. And I think I assume the Mario movie is going to be brighter, so it'll be easier to see when it's still not quite dark.
Yeah, right.
At the drive-in.
And the kids will want to watch that and go to sleep, right?
Right. One last thing before I get to, before I do the outro here. I went to the theater in Cincinnati when I was close. I was about half an hour from Cincinnati. And I went to see a movie called Suzume. This is by the writer and director of Your Name, if you remember that anime film that we watched with the kids, the high schoolers that swap bodies. I really enjoyed this. So I think if you have a chance, I think it's still at the Bloomington Theater for a while. It's fairly new.
It's an anime in the theater?
Nice. Yeah. It's like, it's, if you enjoyed Your Name, which I don't remember, I think you did.
I think I liked it,
It's got a similar kind of vibe where it's sort of a character story, but there's a little bit of supernatural stuff that's not really explained, but big on the sort of emotions of the characters, and of course just gorgeous art and animation. I always like to see a good anime in the theater because you don't get a lot of chances, and
you don't, you really don't
normally watch anime on my computer screen. It's small, and so to see it on the big screen and see all the care and time that goes into making that animation, even with the help of computers, like, it's still just gorgeous and impressive.
That reminds me of seeing anime in the theater. I can't believe I didn't remember this until just this moment. One of Sydney's birthday gifts, she turned 17 this year, and last Monday, and I bought her tickets to go see Spirited Away on stage.
Yeah.
And now it wasn't actually on stage. It was the recording of the Japanese on stage in Japan. And so you get to watch them there. And I've never seen like that, like a play on
the
type thing.
That sounds super interesting.
It was okay. Like I picked seats on the floor instead of in the stadium area so we could be closer-ish, but not too close, to kind of get immersed in it, right? Hopefully.
Sure.
My real quick review of it would be, it was cool and it was really interesting. I do not think that you would like it if you have never seen Spirited Away.
I was a little skeptical because there's a lot of what happens in that film is difficult to translate to stage.
Yeah.
Right. Like you could do it in live action. We have that in technology now, but like there's flying and huge spirits, and all that stuff that I'm like, how would they do that on stage?
Well, they do those. Actually, that kind of stuff they do, and they do interestingly well. Like it's maybe there's some videos or something online where you can see some of those things, and they do clearly the person who made this and wrote this and directed it and everything loved the source material because there's so many little nuance of things that they do that are exactly like the show. When Chihiro is down in the boiler room and I think it's when the little sprite things come out around her feet or something, she has a chill go up her spine. And in the anime, it's shown by like little squiggly lines kind of going up from her feet all the way up. And then her ponytail. Yeah, her ponytail like goes up, right? They do that by having a cast member come behind her and then like almost do like a tickling motion from her feet all the way up to her hair ponytail and make her ponytail flip up. So the actress is going whoop, and I'm like, I know the scene that they're reproducing here, right?
That sounds great.
But you don't know what really is happening there, why they do that, unless you've seen it. The real problem with translating is. Yubaba is the witch lady, right?
Yep.
She does so much stuff in her big presence where her head, when she gets angry, her head gets huge and she fills the whole screen and Chihiro's down, right? And it shows this big, and they kind of try to replicate that by the actress all of a sudden they'll come out with like a big paper mache head talking, but it doesn't fill up the whole stage, right? And all you kind of look at is like, why do they have a big paper mache head, you know, yelling? it doesn't translate at all. And that's kind of an important to that anime does these huge overblown things to, whether it be love or sadness or anger or whatever, it makes it huge and things. And they try to translate that on a stage and you don't quite get it. I did because I've watched this movie, you know, 10 times. And everyone that was there had as well. But I knew that I thought the whole time, I was like, if Shelley had come and seen this, she would have no idea what's happening, not understand a thing. They get out of, they do the car scene. It's almost like shot for shot. They do the very beginning when they're going in the car and she goes through the tunnel. But then all of a sudden they walk into this stage and it's supposed, and the parents start eating and turning into pigs. But you don't know, like you don't see the huge grassy vista you know, that they walk through with the train, and they just have like a little choo-choo train that kind of goes on the edge of the stage instead of what you see of on the anime of a far off distant train. So it doesn't just, it doesn't translate well. So I liked it. We both loved it a lot, but we also were 100% on board that like the only reason we liked this is because we could see the scene in our head that they're reproducing here.
Right.
And you get it. You would have no idea what the little sprite things are. Otherwise, you know, they got little things. Another thing I didn't really like that they did is in modern plays, they will have puppets a lot of times, and the people manning the puppets are in complete black. If they're on stage, you don't see them very well. You see the colorful puppets being moved around.
They
were in like brown kimono type things, just pure brown. Like, you totally saw them with their faces and everything holding puppets walking around. I'm like,
interesting.
It was, it made it not look believable. It looked like people holding puppets instead of the frog walking around on the stage.
Right.
I appreciated it. At the end of the day, we really liked it. She really liked it. It was a good thing, but not something that you're going to come and say, oh, you should go watch this.
Right. Sure. Somebody's not probably between, who knows, like, I've never seen a Japanese play, so I don't know if there's...
Yeah, I don't know. It felt Western, at least from that way.
Mm.
But just the script was anime. It's a medium that does its own thing.
I've watched a couple of Japanese dramas, as they say, especially. The one I saw was not an adaptation, but sometimes they'll make live action versions of anime that are often adapted from manga, and so the characters, like they'll recreate the anime episodes with real people, and I'm like, oh no, this is so much worse. I can handle the animated characters doing kind of exaggerated emotional things, because I've come to expect that style. When I see real people doing it, I'm like, oh no, it's like the subs versus dub thing for me. Like, when I'm just reading the text, like, I can process that, you know, what the text says is not what they're actually saying. Like, it's something more, you know, in context or whatever, what they would expect to say. It's not this clunky English translation.
Yeah. Do you think
it's the same thing with the live action?
Can you think of any anime that's been turned into live action that's been good?
I haven't seen enough to say, maybe like Alita Battle Angel.
I was getting ready to say, like, good. Alita Battle Angel even had the, I've like, never, this is weird.
I've never seen the original, but I liked that movie a lot.
Yeah, and that one was fine. That's what I was thinking about. Like, that one was fine, but still, I have a feeling, like, the guy pulls out the big, huge, massive hammer with the engine on the end of it and starts swinging it around. I'm like, I bet that was super, super cool in the anime or the manga.
Right. You know?
But they're doing it here, and it looks weird. And there's been things like Death Note. There's been, what's the Brotherhood?
I saw that, and I don't remember anything about Full Metal Alchemist.
Full Metal Alchemist, yeah, they have that one. Which every time I try to start those on Netflix or something, I'm like, I should just go watch the manga or the anime, you know?
Right.
Because that feels like what I would want to watch anyway. So yeah, that was my review of this one. Better on. It's one of the best in the genre. So.
Right.
It would have been a real hard thing to reach to equal anyway.
Sure. Yeah.
That's all I got for that.
All right. So, where's my notes here? You've been listening to The Front Porch. This is episode 294. Thanks always to our friends at LRM Online. You can check them out. Our buddy Fox writes reviews on things you can read there. If you want to reach out to us and tell us your favorite live-action anime adaptation, you can do that via email. Our address is frontporchpod@gmail.com. If you go to our website, frontporchpodcast.com, you can find contact forms to reach out to us and show notes where relevant for the episodes. If you enjoy The Front Porch, please consider subscribing on the podcatcher of your choice. And while you're there, if you would leave us a review, we always appreciate that. It helps us out a lot. As always, thanks so much for joining us. And until next time, I'm Dennis.
And I'm Michael.
For The Front Porch.
Night, everybody.
See you next time.